We were talking the other week about what Rosh Hashanah commemorates. So on the one hand, the most obvious commemoration is Rosh Hashanah commemorates the original Rosh Hashanah of human history. According to many Tanaim, the day 6 of the Bria was Aleph Tishrei. So Rosh Hashanah is the day that Adam Rishon is endowed with a neshama. The day that Adam Rishon is given his first mitzvah. It's also the day that Adam Rishon violates his first mitzvah. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is down him. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu goes upon him. Adam and Chava will be leaving Gan Eden. And at the same time, I think we discussed a week or so ago, that the Vilna Gaon points out in Tav Kuf Pei Gimel in Arachayim, it also commemorates the return to Gan Eden. Commemorates the bracha of Yitzchak to Yaakov, Reach Bini Kreach Atash Abrech Hashem, that Yitzchak senses when Yaakov enters the room that he has in some sense returned to Gan Eden. He now smells of the Chakal Tapuch and Kadishin. But there is a third historical Rosh Hashanah also. So horrific, a truly horrible Rosh Hashanah. So horrific that we cannot commemorate it on Rosh Hashanah, we commemorate it instead today. Because according to many, we've shown him, Gedaliah was murdered, Gedaliah was assassinated on the 1st of Tishrei. That's the Machlokas. He's assassinated today, he was assassinated 2 days ago, and it's always a Nidcha. But you might be wondering, who exactly was Gedaliah? And you might be wondering what his assassination is supposed to mean to us, how it's supposed to shape our avoda of the course of Aseres Metshuva. And you might also be wondering, which of these four is not like the other? We have four Tanyos on the Churban. The other three are all national events. The laying of the siege to Yerushalayim, the breaching of the walls of Yerushalayim, the destruction of Beis HaMikdash, those all seem like communal national events that are appropriate for communal national tanis. Gedaliah's death was a tragedy for him. It was a tragedy for his family, certainly. But he struggled to understand what's going on. Why are we fasting well over 2,000 years later? Around 2,500 years later, we're still fasting for Gedaliah. So it must be Dvarim Bego. It must be something else at work. And as we're going to discover, it's actually not a single story, but there's a double story of Gedaliah. A double story of Gedaliah, it's, as I said before, it's a horrific, horrific, horrific story. And just a couple minutes, we're going to roll up our sleeves and begin to learn some Sukkim and Seir B'Mi'o that describe it. And then we'll see, that story 2,500 years ago was a horrific story, and it, I think, also gives us some positive direction in terms of guidance for growth moving forward for us right now, right here, the Shnas Tav Shin Pei. But before we, and if you feel that part of the tshuva that you need to do, perhaps part of your Cheshvan Nefesh over the course of Rosh Hashanah, you realize that you're deficient in the realm of Torah Shabbosav, so we are about to roll up our sleeves, learn a couple of prakim of Yirmiyahu. But before we do that, let's frame it. Let's frame the story of Gedaliah Yirmiyahu with the Gemara and the Rambam person. The Gemara is talking about, is also the Gemara, Rosh Hashanah is commenting on a different passage in Tanakh, a far more positive, friendly, optimistic passage in Tanakh. The Gemara Rosh Hashanah, Daf Yechesen Beis, the main sugya of the Tanios and the Churban, is really built around the pasuk in Zechariah. Zechariah, Yirmiyahu, as we're going to soon see, is the Navi before and after the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash. Zechariah is a couple of generations later, he's one of the Nevi'im that returns for the building of the second Beis HaMikdash. Gemara Zvachim tells us that Kadosh Baruch Hu would have already ended the era of Nevuah. Rabbi Yisrael decides to extend it a little bit and sends the last three Nevi'im with Klal Yisrael to Eretz Yisrael to aid in the building, the re-establishment of the Jewish community in Eretz Yisrael. The building of the second base of Mikdash, Chagai, Zechariah, and Malachi. Gemara Rosh Hashanah in Chesed Beis is commenting on a conversation that the Jews are having with Zechariah. They asked Zechariah, we're moving towards Geula here. What's the story of all those fasts that we have been fasting? We've been fasting over the Churban for decades. And now what happens? The times are changing. Realities are shifting. So how do we keep the halacha in a new reality? Do we still fast on these days? Now that we're back in Eretz Yisrael, now we're in the process of building Beis HaMikdash. And the Gemara, and they ask Zechariah, and Zechariah gives sort of a complicated, nuanced answer. He says yes and no and maybe. So the Gemara there discusses the whole back and forth. For now, we're going to zero in on the very beginning. One line is relevant to specifically today. Because the way they phrase the question is using numbers. They say the Tzom of the fourth, the fast of the fifth, the fast of the seventh, the fast of the tenth, Ha'evket, do I still cry in these days? So the first thing we want to know is, well, what are those numbers? 4, 5, 7, 10. Or more precisely, 4th, 5th, 7th, and 10th. So the Gemara says, you know what they are? They're numbers not of days, numbers of months. That's Tammuz, is month 4. Av is month 5. Tishrei is month 7. And Teves is month 10. So all of a sudden, that's the fast of Tammuz, the fast of Av, the fast of Teves. And here we are, Soma Shvi'i, the Gemara says, Ze Gimel B'Tishrei. Soma Shvi'i, the fast of Tishrei, this is not a reference to Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is a separate parsha. These four Tzomos are old Tzomos of the Churban. That's today. That's the third of Tishrei, Tzom Gedalia, Shabo Nera Gedalia Ben Achikam. Today is the day that Gedalia was murdered. Either he was actually murdered today, as many Rishon read, or it's a day that we mark when he was murdered. Well, Miharago, who killed him? Yishmal ben Yesanya Harago. Gedalia will meet Gedalia soon and will meet his assassin in the pages of Yirmiyahu as well. His assassin with another Jew with the name Yishmal. Doesn't strike us as a very Jewish name, Yishmal. Although the truth is, there were a number of holy Tanaim, or big Tzaddikim, who were named Yishmal. There was a Tana Rabbi Yishmal, Rabbi Kiva's contemporary. It was Yishmael ben Elisha Kohen Gadol, Yishmael ben Oshab Yochan ben Broka. It was apparently a common name for Jews, for holy Jews, in the days of the Tanaim, but this Yishmael lived a couple of centuries before, and also a Jew, definitely not a holy Jew. Yishmael murdered Gedalia, and that's what we're marking today. And then the Gemara ought to have ended, but the Gemara doesn't. Lil Amet, the Gemara said, and this teaches you. And as you read this Agadah with open eyes and open ears, your London's instinct should be prodding you to ask a question. Lil Amet, Sheshkun, Yisasun, Shal Tzadikim, Kisrei, Bethnei, Sokim. It teaches you that the death of a Tzadik is as weighty, is equivalent to the destruction based on the English. What's the Gemara's point in that last line? You already told me, Tzom HaShvi is Gimel Tishrei. You told me why, it's because of the assassination of Gedalia. What question remains that the Gemara is trying to answer that Lula Medcha? Exactly. We asked before. Okay, so Gedalia was murdered, that was a tragedy. But why is that a tragedy for which we're still fasting 2.5 millennia later? So the Gemara sounds like the answer is, no! It's like Sreifas Pesach look like Tisha B'Av. This is a national tragedy. Of course, as a sparring Londonim, you would ask, how does the answer the question? Hare, Gedalia was not the only tzaddik to die in Jewish history. Right? Some of you daven shuls where there's an awareness that every day is the yard site of many tzaddikim. So we don't, therefore, skip tachnun and fast every single day. Shkula misa tzaddikim, kisrefas beis elokeinu. So obviously the Gemara doesn't mean every single tzaddik. Otherwise we haven't answered anything. So probably the Gemara, this is the beginning of a longer conversation. The Gemara is giving me the tip. Presumably the Gemara means the death of certain tzaddikim. There was something special about Gedalia. He's the only tzaddik whose death uniquely drives a national tainus. So it wasn't just that he was a tzaddik. He was in some sense a very unique type of tzaddik. That somehow it's communal. So the Gemara is clearly raising the question and telling us something. We're going to have to dig into Yirmiyahu some more to understand, well, what exactly is that something? So for now, let's take a look
at two Rambams. One which is ostensibly quoting this Gemara.
The Rambam Hilchos Tainus Parakei. Parakei on the base. The first four prakim of Hilchos Tainus are mostly about what Masechas Tainus is mostly about, the type of Tainus that we are not so familiar with. The first four prakim are about Tainus if there's some sort of national crisis right now. There's a lack of rain in Eretz Yisrael, there's famine, there's war, some sort of national crisis. That's actually how the Rambam opened. Take a look in the next Rambam. Those are some statements for now at Halacha. Parak Aleph, Aleph.
We've quoted this in the past. This is the second mitzvah of davening. Mitzvah Saseh Min HaTorah, Tanis Atanios Aleph Aleph. Mitzvah Saseh Min HaTorah, Lizok Ulahariya Bachatzotros, Akol Tzara Shetavo Atzibur. Rachman Lefon is some sort of national tragedy. Is a mitzvah to be zoek, to cry out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. For the Rambam, this is the second mitzvah d'oraisa of tefillah. He counted a mitzvah d'oraisa of daily tefillah in Hilchos Tefillah. And then tefillah beis tzara is right here. And it's to be zoek and to be meiria b'chav, to blow chatzotros. That's the parsha of chatzotros, one of the psukim. And the parsha of chatzotros and parsha's balas. We'll get back to that soon. That's the first four prakim. And then Perek Hey, the Rambam begins to talk about the part of Hilchos Tanyos that we are most familiar with. The Tanyos for the Purim. So he's working his way through, explaining the different Tanyos. And here in the Perek Hey of the Beis, Yom Shlishi V'Tishrei Shabo Nerev Gedaliah Ben Achikam. Gedaliah was murdered today, clearly a quote from the Gemara of Shani V'Chesim Beis. The Nichbez Gachelas Yisrael HaNesheres. The remaining ember, the last glowing coal of the Jewish people, was extinguished. If you've ever grilled, not with a gas grill, but if you ever made a bonfire, that was actual either wood or charcoal, one or the other, so you know when the fire goes out, especially if you let it go out on its own, or if you pour some water on it, so it'll be out, but there'll still be a couple of coals that are glowing. Or maybe if you scrape away, there'll be a coal that's covered with white dust. If you poke it, all of a sudden there'll be a glow. If you put some fire or put a piece of paper on it, it may still leak back into flames. The last glowing ember of Klal Yisrael, in Eretz Yisrael, was extinguished with the death of Gedaliah. So we're already starting to hear a little more. Presumably the Rambam is referencing that Gemara and is trying to explain. This was the end of Klal Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael. And this caused the completion, the fullness of Golos. Okay. So number one, this is a story of Gedaliah. We want to know what the story is. And also, as you put it, as the Gemara is asking, why does it matter? And here's another problem. Here's a problem that bothered me for many years, and I had the chance this past summer to discuss it with Rashi. I want to show you a single strange word in the Rambam. Going back to Perek Aleph of Hilchos Tanyos, Rambam says, as we saw, there's a mitzvah d'oraisa be'eis tzara, there's a tzara for Klal Yisrael, there's a chiyuv d'oraisa to daven, to let it rip, to mamash, yell, and scream tribonishal. And he goes on to say, Halacha Beis, v'davrez emidarkei tshuvahu. And this notion of being zoek, the Kadosh Baruch Hu, this is one of the methods of tshuva. Shebizman shetavu tzar v'yizakur aleh v'yariv. And if there's a national crisis, and our response is to call out the Kadosh Baruch Hu, our response is lochatzotos yedu'u. You know what that accomplishes? Tefillah works. Tefillah helps. But even before the tefillah has impact in Shamayim, it has impact. Rambam says ba'aretz. As impact on us. That reminds us that if there's a national tzara, we have to look at our national actions. And this is Chayav Yonesh. And then he says, and this can cause the tzara to be removed. We'll do tshuva gevaldik.
So what would be the opposite of that? Again, Rambam says, if you daven the Eistara, that reinforces your Amunah. It reinforces the connection between what we do and what happens to us. That life is not random. Life is not stochastic. Kadosh Baruch Hu was running the world, and things happen for a reason. Sometimes obvious and sometimes inobvious, but life is not random, stochastic chance. That's what that emunah is reinforced when we respond to tzara with tefillah. And let's say I don't. What would be the opposite of that? What would you say? I don't. If I just brush it, stuff is happening, rough things are happening, I just brush it off, say it's chance. How do you describe the third reaction? What do you say?
Fear.
Fear? Certainly a weakness in Amunah. The Rambam says something strange. In my years, the people are real. Let's say, so Jewish people don't react with Sfilah. We don't react with Chatzot. Ella, rather, Yomru Dabra Zedinigol Nirolana. Just life. Sarazum Nikri Nikris. Totally by chance. There's no explanation. There's no reason. There's no meaning. Arezu, we would have thought, Arezu Derech. Kursa Sfira. Something. Miyut Amuna. Katnos Amuna. Arezu Derech Achzarius, Ram says. That's cruel. What else? Funny word. It's cruel. I always thought it's a theological problem. It's a problem with your emunah. He says, you're a nasty, you didn't daven, you're a nasty person. You're a nasty person. Wow. You're a nasty person. I have a problem with my midos, my benam l'chavero. There's a problem with the benam l'makom. If a Kadosh Baruch Hu is not in the picture, that's sort of like a funny, you're cruel. You didn't daven, you're cruel. You just brushed off the stuff out of your life. As chance, you're cruel. It's an odd word. And I was driving at something. And you can check other editions. You can check the Kisvei Yad. That's what the Ram wrote. It's cruel. That's funny. So let's file that away. That second question. Because this is part of the Avoda of Atinus. Is gain over that cruelty. I didn't realize that was cruel. So let's file that away for now. Let's turn our attention back to Gedalia. And let's roll up our sleeves and learn some Tanakh. Zechariah was very pleasant. Yirmiyahu is mostly not so pleasant. Mostly not so pleasant. We had a very beautiful haftar for Yirmiyahu yesterday. Very phenomenal. Gorgeous. The everlasting love. Abba Solom Avtich. Okay, Mashach Bichosen. Aden Yaker Le'Ephraim. Yesterday, Parak Laban Al Yirmiyahu was a beautiful haftar. Most of Yirmiyahu is not so pleasant. There's a reason why Jeremiah is an English word that means a prediction of gloom and doom. Because that's most of what Yirmiyahu did was to predict gloom and doom. Because he lived, as I mentioned before, at the end of the Bais Gishon period, the very, very end. By his time, there no longer is, there still is a Beis HaMikdash, when he begins his career, but the Jews are basically not really a free people in Eretz Yisrael anymore. They have kings, quote-unquote, supposedly, but Yoshiyahu had been the last real free king of the Jewish people. You remember the story of Chizkiyah HaMelech, who had been one of the great tzaddikim. Some opinions in Chazal said he almost was Mashiach. Chizkiyahu lived at a time that the northern kingdom was already gone. To back up even more, David and his son Shlomo are kings of the entire Eretz Yisrael. All 12 Shvatim were united in a single united kingdom under David, and subsequently after David passes away, under Shlomo HaMelech. But the Navi comes to Shlomo and tells him, this is not going to last because of your chatam. Your son will only take over the south of Eretz Yisrael, the Kachava. Shlomo passes away. Rechavam ben Shlomo becomes king of the southern kingdom of Malchus Yehuda. But Yeravam ben Nevat is chosen by the Navi to be king of the northern kingdom, of what we call the Aseres HaShvatim, Malchus Yisrael. And as you trace through Sefer Melachim, Malchus Yisrael was horrific, came out from beginning to, in terms of leadership. Every king, one after another, is a Rasha Marusha, loads of Odozara, loads of corruption, loads of misuse of power in every which way.
ultimately in during the period of Chizkiyahu is the end of the northern kingdom. The Assyrian Empire comes to power. They're just growing when Yonah is sent to save Nineveh, which according to some opinions in Chazal, and we'll get to Yonah later over the course of Seder Shemitshuva. Some opinions in Chazal have that Yonah understood that if he saved Nineveh, they would grow to be the empire that would be the vehicle for HaKadosh Baruch Hu destroying the Malchus Yisrael. And indeed, Kachava. Malchus Yisrael is ultimately... Ashur becomes a superpower. Their empire grows to encompass most of the Middle East plus. And their Sancheirev is eating countries for lunch. Mass migrations. He is building his empire at a rapid rate. And earlier emperors as well as Sancheirev take care of the north of Eretz Yisrael. Then Sancheirev turns his attention to the south of Eretz Yisrael, to Malchus Yehuda. And he destroys much of Malchus Yehuda, comes to the gates of Yerushalayim, well over 100,000 soldiers encamped around Yerushalayim, an impenetrable siege. And the Navi Yeshayah tells Chizkiyahu, Hashem said, he's not coming in. They wake up one morning, Chazal say it's the morning of the first day of Pesach, after Leil HaSeder, and Sancheirev's army is a combination of dead and fled. There are no live soldiers left around the outside. Nisei Nisim, and that's the end. As a matter of fact, if you take a look, in case you're interested in secondary historical sources that reflect the same story that appears in multiple places in Tanakh, we actually have, you can see, I believe, in the British Museum, they excavated records. Mm-hmm. Records of the military annals of Assyrian history, authored by Sancheirev and his crew. Now, only Jews are so honest, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent us Nevi'im, that we describe in our national history our own flaws. That was not a thing, certainly, in the ancient period. So Sancheirev doesn't say he lost, but he does say, well, I conquered this country, I conquered that country, I conquered this country, and I came to Eretz Yehuda, and I conquered I sacked X number of cities, including Lachish, which was at the time the second largest city in Eretz Yehuda, second to Yerushalayim. And I laid siege to Yerushalayim. Period. He wasn't going to say, I didn't get in, but the silence is deafening. And Yehuda Landi, who was a Talmud Chacham and a self-taught archaeologist in Eretz Yisrael, he points out that if you continue to read further, Sancheirev is like the magnitude never comes back. Like after that point, it's all little skirmishes. Sancheirev, the world conqueror, the man who ate countries for lunch, that's over. That's over after the failed siege in Yerushalayim. So that was a great moment for Klal Yisrael. And three generations later is King Yoshiyahu, also a very powerful king, who after two generations of Avodah Zarah and Malchus Yehuda leads an enormous tshuva movement, find the Sefer Torah, and he does tshuva, and he leads Klal Yisrael and do an extraordinary tshuva. And maybe you had a chance to hear about him over the course of Tisha B'Av, because he was a little over spiritually overconfident, thought that all of the brachas and the brachas and klalos would be relevant to him, and sought to stop Mitzrayim from coming through Eretz Yisrael. I mentioned that Ashur had been growing into the dominant superpower in the Middle East. Egypt decided it was time to challenge them, and Egypt is headed up alongside the Mediterranean up to what we would call nowadays Syria or Turkey to fight against Ashur at Carchemish. There's going to be the invitations went out. There was going to be a major world war was going to be happening in Carchemish, and Mitzrayim did want to make sure to be there. They wanted to whip the Assyrians. Yoshio decided that here's his chance. He's going to stop Mitzrayim. He tries to cut off Mitzrayim. They're going along the coast, and Yoshio is killed. Yoshio is killed, and that is not only the end of Yoshio, it's the end of Jewish sovereignty in Eretz Israel. Because from that point on,
for the rest of the Bais Rishon period, there would be a series of kings, all of whom are descendants of Yoshua HaMelech, but none of them are really kings. None of them are really powerful. They're all puppets of Mitzrayim or of Ashur, or ultimately of Babel. Some superpower or another is really running Eretz Yisrael, and they just, ultimately Nebuchadnezzar, there's a puppet king by the name of Yechoniah. You know him, if, at the very least, from Megillas Esther. Nebuchadnezzar decides that Yechoniah is not sufficiently loyal, so he takes Yechoniah and kicks him out, ejects Yechoniah and Mordechai and much of the Jewish aristocracy. Most of the Jews remain in Eretz Yisrael with a new puppet king, also a descendant of Yoshua, by the name of Tzidkiyahu. He went by several names, but one of his names is Tzidkiyahu. Around a decade later, Nebuchadnezzar decides Tzidkiyahu is not loyal enough either. Nebuchadnezzar comes back with Nebuzaradan, his general, and they destroy the Beis HaMikdash. Tzidkiyahu is taken to Gaul together with multitudes of other Jews, thousands, perhaps millions of Jews are massacred. Thousands, perhaps millions of Jews are taken to Gaulis, to Babel, and elsewhere. And all through this, the last number of years, Yirmiyahu has been pleading with the Jews. Kadosh Baruch Hu wants, do tshuva before it's too late. Do tshuva before it's too late. And they're like, no, we're fine. He's like, do you realize how precarious the situation is? But every Jewish, quote unquote, king who's in charge has a vested interest in convincing the Jews that we're all good, I got this, we're safe, you're good, I'm good, nothing's going to happen. Yirmiyahu keep telling them. Kadosh Baruch Hu said that if you don't do tshuva, it's very beautiful the other Beis HaMikdash, but the Beis HaMikdash is not going to protect you if it's full of Jews who are empty of mitzvahs. And no one listens. Ultimately, Kadosh Baruch Hu tells him, we're past the PNR, past the point of no return. Now it's time to give a different message to Jewish people. You can do that. Now you're on track to Churban. The king is not, the Jewish king is not interested in that message. That wasn't such a friendly, it wasn't politically correct. So they throw Yirmiyahu into jail, but jailing the messenger does not negate the message. And unfortunately, Yirmiyahu's nevuah comes true. As we know, first base of Mikdash is destroyed. A bloodbath. But then, here we parachute into the middle of Perek Mem of Yirmiyahu, where we discover that all was not lost. Most was, but not all. And then we're actually in the middle of a conversation between Nebuzaradan, the Babylonian general, and Yirmiyahu HaNavi, where he tells Yirmiyahu, you got a choice. You can come back with me to Babel as a free man, not in shackles, or Yirmiyahu, you can stay here. You can stay there with Israel. You're obviously not going to read every word. If you want to, you can head back to Eretz Yehuda, to the town of Mitzvah, which is now under the leadership of a Jew named Gedaliah. Asher hifkid melech Bavel bar Yehuda. Fascinating. Nebuchadnezzar decided we're done with being even a semblance of a sovereign nation in Eretz Yisrael, but Eretz Yisrael will be a colony, but a Jewish colony, under the leadership of a Jewish governor. Nebuchadnezzar, the emperor of Babylonia, had appointed the Jew Gedaliah to be the governor, the imperial governor of Eretz Yehuda as a colony of the Babylonian Empire. And he says, you can go back if you want. And this is a real offer. And Yirmiyahu takes him up on it. He says, thank you very much. I'm not going to come with you to Babel. Pasuk Perek Mem, Pasuk Vav, Vayavu Yirmiyahu Gedaliah ben Achikam HaMitzpasa. He comes to the town of Mitzpah. You might recognize that name from Shmuel, from the Haftarah 2 days ago. And this was where they had reconvened. And now you begin to hear, you hear the stories about how there were Jews who survived the Holocaust, who survived World War II, as partisans in the forest. They had these unofficial Jewish militias. They lived in the forest. They fought against the Nazis. And here you have it. The Pasuk Zayin. All the military officers, the Jewish military officers, who had been out in the field. Most of the Jewish army had been in Yerushalayim and had been massacred. But there had been some units that were out in the forests. And because of where they were, they survived. They survived. And now they hear that stability is returning. that peace is returning in some sense, and they begin to come back. They hear that the Melech Bavel is giving the Jews another chance. Hifkin Melech Bavel is Gedalia ben Achikim Ba'aretz. And that there were Jews who were left behind who did not take him to Galus, and they come to him, Pasuk Ches. Here's an important list of names, certainly the first couple of names. Vayavoa Gedalia, HaMitzpasa. They come to Mitzpah, to meet with Gedalia. Who's there? Yishma ben Netanyahu, Yochanan and Yonos and the sons of Kerech, two brothers, as well as some others, Sariah and so on and so forth. The whole Hema van Shehem. So a whole group of Jewish military leaders with their militias, with their soldiers. And they come to Gedalia, and what's the very first thing Gedalia does in Pasuk Tes is what? What's the first thing he does? Take a look. He swears. Vayishava. Why is he swearing? Vayishava, and when you listen to what he says, it becomes clear what their concern is. You understand the politics. Vayishava lam Gedalia ben Achikam. He swears to the leaders and to their people, to the whole, it's not just a private meeting, Ulan Shem, to the whole group. Al tiru mevorakastim. I swear to you, you need not be afraid of working for the Babylonians. Kastim is not the name for the Babylonians. Shvu baretz. Live here. Ivdu es melech bavel v'yitav lachem. It'll be good. In other words, obviously, they're frightened out of their minds. We've already been down this road several times before. He put in a king, and he deposed him. He put in a king, and he deposed him. He destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. He massacred all of our brothers. And now, we're supposed to come back, be in the open. We've been safe in the forest. So Gedalia says, I swear to you, we had serious conversations, and if we keep our end of the deal, we can live in peace here. Melech Bavel will allow us to live in safety and security. I swear to you, Gedalia says to them. And he even says in Pasuk Yud, begin to farm. I want you to go farm. Now if you think about it, maybe you don't necessarily speak this language, but to farm requires a sense of stability. Because you plant now and you harvest in months from now. So he says, move into the land, not just open a little shop, but become farmers again. That means you can really settle in. We're really here for the long term. And they do. And then you hear in Pasuk Yud Aleph, not only the Jews were out in the forests around Yerushalayim, but there were Jews who were further out. There were Jews who were living in what we would call southern Jordan nowadays. Chol Yehudim Asher B'Moav U'Bnei Amon U'Ve'Edom Asher B'Chol Ha'aratzos. The Jews had fled to all the surrounding lands, 50, 100 miles away. They hear, wow, Nosan Melech Bavel She'eris LeYehuda. There is a remnant of Eretz Yehuda, of Malchus Yehuda, in Eretz Israel. And he's allowing, the king of Babel is allowing that to continue. And not only that, it's official. Hifke Aleim is Gedalia ben Achikam. And the Jews come back. It sounds beautiful. At the end of this parsha, Pasuk Yud Beis, it's beginning to even sound a little idyllic. And after the storm, it's almost like a kibbutz galus. Jews are starting to come back from here and from there. Not mamash kibbutz galus, but things are, peace is being restored. Normalcy is resuming. Unfortunately, the idyllic state is very, very short-lived. In the very next pasuk, you hear about a series of two meetings that Yochanan, the general, has with Gedalia. Yochanan ben Kereach, the Chol Sareach Ha'ilim Asher Basadeh, Yochanan together with his other military officers, who presumably he was the commander, they answered to him. So remember the first time they'd come to Gedalia with all their people. Everyone came. And Gedalia swore to all of them, including all the privates, everyone from top to bottom, you'll be safe. Now this is an officer's meeting. Yochanan and the Sareach Ha'ilim. They come to Gedalia and they say to him, all is not well. All is not well. Our neighbor next door is not so happy that we're restabilizing. Baalis, the king of Ammon, who we just heard about in the previous pasuk, right on the other side of the Yarden, on the other side of Yad Melach, the southern Jordan, Baalis, the king of Ammon, is none too happy that the Jews have retained the foothold. He was probably thrilled that the Jews were being neutralized by Nebuchadnezzar Malvado. And now he hears that you're here, that you represent the return of stability and the continuity of the Jewish people here in Israel. Melech Hamon is not happy. He maybe even wanted to take over this land, or at the very least, to not have to worry about an enemy to the west. So what's he up to? We heard about Yishmael before. He was the first of the officers to have come in the first meeting. So he was a general or colonel, some sort of senior military officer in the Jewish army. And Yochanan says he's a double agent. Baalis, the king of Ammon, is paying him off to assassinate you. Baalis wants you out of the picture, and he paid Yishmael to take care of you. So be careful. And what does Gedaliah say? Narishkeit. Narishkeit. It can't be. Gedaliah said, I don't believe it. A Jew would kill a Jew? Hayitachin. We just lived through horrific pogroms at the hands of the Bavlian. And the Bavlian were killing Jews. But for a Jew to kill another Jew, you think that Yishmael was hired by Baalis and he's actually going to kill me? Lo yitachin. Doesn't believe it. What's going to happen in the next pasuk? Yochanan ben Kareach Amar Gedaliah b'seisa b'mitzvah. Now Yochanan ben Kareach is speaking privately. B'seisa, we know that word from Hilchos Yichud. He's speaking to Gedaliah b'seisa. Well, what just happened? What happened to everyone else? I thought there was a whole group. So Malam says apparently there was another meeting. And Yochanan came with a delegation to impress upon Gedaliah the seriousness of the situation. Gedaliah didn't bite. So Yochanan, the Malam says, Yochanan figures, I see the problem. Gedaliah's a diplomat. He can have a conversation that's in public. He's going to say in public that he believes that Yishmael is out to get him. Word's going to spread. It's not going to be good. So Yochanan figures, okay, let's try this again. So he goes and besays, he comes back later that day, the next week, comes back privately. Just me and you. And he says to Gedaliah, Yochanan says to Gedaliah, this meeting never happened. This meeting never happened. We're having an off-the-record conversation. He says, I understand. Obviously, you're wary of taking public action against Yishmael. I get it. You don't. Here's my second offer, Yochanan says. You don't have to do anything. He says in the passage, says, Vav, Eilcha nova akes Yishmael ben Nesanya. Let me go and kill Yishmael before he kills you. He's a rodef. He's out to get you. I know he's out to get you. Let me get him before he gets you. No one needs to know. In other words, it'll seem like it was just army men who got into some sort of fight. It'll never be traced back to you. Your hands will be clean, but just authorize me to do this. It needs to happen. Your life is in danger. Yochanan tells Gedaliah, I'm not kidding. Your life, you got to believe me. Your life is really in danger. And not only that, he says, he doesn't say your life is in danger. Why should he kill you? All the Jews that have gathered to you will be scattered. When you're gone, they'll all be gone. The remnant of Eretz Yehuda will be destroyed. If you go down, nothing's going to remain. And Yochanan thought that Gedaliah inside believed him, just couldn't say it. So he figured a private conversation would work. Unfortunately, Yochanan was wrong. And Yochanan is right. In Pasuk Tazayin, he discovered Yochanan is wrong because Gedaliah says, don't touch Yishmael. I don't believe it. Yishmael would never kill me. So in Pasuk Tazayin, Yochanan is wrong in thinking that Gedaliah would listen. And in Perek Memal Pasuk Aleph, Yochanan is right because Yishmael shows up in Rosh Hashanah or some kind of Tishrei. The Hebachorosh Hashvi, it's in the month of Tishrei. Again, as mentioned before, Machlokes Beforshim was talking about Aleph Tishrei or Gimel Tishrei. It may well have been Rosh Hashanah. Vay Yishmael ben Nesanya ben Elisham Gezer HaMelucha. Wow, sounds very fancy. Again, the full honorific. Yishmael, the son we had never heard about his grandfather before. The son of Nesanya, the son of a grandson of Elishama from the royal family, V'Rabbei HaMelech.
and other royal retinue, royal figures, the Asara Hanashanito, they bring over a whole minion. They come to Gedalia, to Mitzvah. They yoch Musham Lachem Yachla Mitzvah. They have a Yantav Suda. They have a Rosh Hashanah Suda with Gedalia.
And he brought a whole crowd with him. Covered for the governor. Covered for the governor, he stabs him in the next pasuk in cold blood in the middle of the Rosh Hashanah Suda. Unfortunately, Yochanan was right. Vayakam Yishma ben Asanya, and with his 10 goons, and they kill him, Becherev. They stab him to death in the middle of the Yantav Suda. Talk about the last Suda. They kill the man who had been appointed by the emperor. And then, Rahman al-Islam, for a Jew to murder another Jew in cold blood, on Rosh Hashanah, no less, and then it gets worse. It begins to spiral. Because in Pasuk Gimel, Yishmael says, well, I can't just kill, if I just kill Gedalia and everyone else is still alive in Mitzvah, they're all going to get me. So Yishmael turns around with his mafia and they murder every last human being in the town of Mitzvah, new Jew and non-Jew alike. Called Pasuk Gimel, called Yehudim Ashar Yehito, and the customer Shanim Zucham, everyone is killed. Yishmael kills out the entire town. The capital city of this colony, this Jewish colony, gone. And then it gets even worse. The next day, no one knows yet. Word has not spread because the entire city is either Yishmael's people or no longer alive. So word has not yet spread outside the city walls. And then Jews show up, Pasuk Hey. Jews are coming from the Shomron down to Eretz Yehuda. Look at this description. What a strange, try to visualize this. Shmonimish, 80 people, Megulachei Zakan Kurei Begadim is Godadim. They look like they're in mourning. Their clothes are torn, their skin is torn, their beards are torn. They look terrible. They look overwhelmed with sadness. And mincha ulvanobi adam lavi beis Hashem. His people are in avelus and bringing carbon mincha to beis hamikdash. What does that mean? How did that happen? So presumably, what it means is they left the Shomron. News didn't travel instantly. They left their homes in the Shomron, thinking there was still a beis hamikdash, and they were going to bring karbanos. On the way, presumably on the way, they discovered the terrible news. The Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, and they tore their clothes. And they're still walking in the direction of Eretz Yehuda, not really sure what to do. And then they must have then heard another piece of news, but there is something going on in Mitzvah. The Jewish community is reconvened in Mitzvah, there's security there, and so they show up trying to figure out, well, what do we do with the Karbon Mincha? Where can we go? And who meets them at the door? Yishmael. Pasuk Vav, Yishmael goes out to greet them. Oh, you're here to join us in Mitzvah. Sure, come on in. At Mamash, we read like that, the way you read descriptions of the Nazis. Say, come on in and join us. And they come in and he slaughters them all as soon as they enter the city walls. He says, come on into Gedalia. And Kavom Tocha Ir, Yishchatem Yishmael ben Asanya Tocha Bor. And he kills them as soon as they get them in under false pretenses. Murders them all, and in this, Mamash sounds like the story that you see in the museums of the Holocaust. He kills them into a pit. And then the Pasuk even tells us the tragic irony. This pit used to be a holy pit. This pit had been dug in Pasuk Tess. That pit, where all the bodies were thrown, it had originally been built for the Olei Regel. During the period of Asa Melech Yehuda, one of the good kings of Malchus Yehuda, the Jewish population had been growing, Jews had been coming from all over to Aliyah L'Rego, and there was a need for more infrastructure to provide for the Jews, traveling three times a year up and down these roads. So they had, among other things, they had built
a more robust water system. And part of that was in Mitzvah, they had built an enormous pit, a water cistern, to gather rainwater. So when the Jews are traveling to and from Eretz Yerushalayim, they'll have water to drink. And now, Nebuch, the pit that had been dug to provide life for Jews going to Beis HaMikdash is now the pit of death for Jews who thought they were going to Beis HaMikdash. And then, if you thought it couldn't get any worse, it does. In at least two ways. Number one, Sukkim go on to say, in the balance of Paraklet Malach, Yochanan comes back. It's the same phrase. Pasuk Yud Aleph, Yochanan ben Kereach v'chol sarei chalim asher ito. That's the same group you heard about in Parak Mem, who had come pleading to Gedaliah to do something like Yishmael, and now they hear that what they thought would happen is exactly what happened, and in fact, Yishmael had succeeded in assassinating Gedaliah, and they come back, and they push Yishmael away, but it's too late to save Gedaliah. It's too late to save probably the hundreds of people who Yishmael has murdered by now, maybe thousands, hard to know for sure. An entire city's worth plus. And then they realize that there's a whole other layer here. Not only were so many Jews killed, so many people were killed, tragedy in its own right, the Jews and the costumes, but how is this going to be interpreted back in Mo, back in headquarters? So we know, Yochanan said, we know that this Yishmael was a renegade Jew who was a maverick, who was not part of us, who was out to get us. But when news gets back to the capital of the Babylonian Empire, they're going to hear, we installed a government official, Gedaliah, and the officer of the Babylonian Empire was murdered by the Jews, by the Jewish army. It was one of the generals of the Jewish army, General Yishmael. So what are they going to say in Babel? We tried, we gave them another chance, and that was an act of treason. They murdered Gedaliah, who represented the Babylonian government. We're going to wipe them all out. So Yochanan says, Gevalt. There's a tragedy of all these Jews who were killed, and whoever's remains is not going to last. Whoever wasn't killed by Yishmael is going to be killed by Nebuchadnezzar. They're going to come and get us all. What do we do? Maybe we should run to Mitzrayim. As we learned earlier, right? Egypt was a rival superpower to Ashur. Ashur was to the northeast, and Mitzrayim, Egypt, was to the southwest. So Yochanan figures the only safety is to run to Mitzrayim. They'll be willing to take us, and we'll be safe there. And they turn to Yirmiyahu and Perek Mem Beis. They say to you, we haven't heard about Yirmiyahu in a while. They say to Yirmiyahu, what do? Everything's falling apart. We go to Mitzrayim. How do we go to Mitzrayim? What should we do? And Yirmiyahu says, that's a really good question. Let me go down. Maybe I'll be zochet to Nevuah. He davened, the Pesukim say in Perek Mem Beis, down for 10 days. Probably not Seres Metshuvah, but the number is certainly significant. And he comes back to them with a surprise. And after 10 days of davening, HaKadosh Baruch Hu reveals himself to Yirmiyahu and tells Yirmiyahu, you go tell Yochanan and the whole Jewish community, stay put. Stay put. Stay in Eretz Yisrael, you'll be okay. It's sort of reminiscent of Yishayahu telling Chizkiah a century or two earlier, you'll be okay in Yerushalayim. You stay in Yerushalayim, some peers are not going to touch you. But this time, Yirmiyahu tells them, Rav Shalom said, don't move. Just stay here in Mitzvah. And even though it doesn't make political sense, you'll be safe. So one spiral impact of all the murder, mass murder on the part of Yishmael, was now we're destabilized, and we're not sure where we stand, Kalape Bavel. And then it gets even worse. Because when Yirmiyahu comes to Yochanan to tell him, Rav Shalom said, just stay where you are. It's counterintuitive, but that's what I'm talking about. Over the world, he said, stay where you are. You know what Yochanan says in Parak Mem Gimel? He hatches a conspiracy plot. He says, that makes no sense. You're lying. God didn't tell you that. it must be your Talmud that you have a whole complex conspiracy theory. That this whole theory that Yo's Talmud, Baruch Ben Neriya, is in cahoots with this one and with that one, and there's some angle and some hidden agenda, and you're trying to maneuver us, manipulate us, and they say, you're making a law. They're destabilized physically, militarily, security-wise, and they become destabilized spiritually. Yochanan, who had been the tzaddik all the way through, trying to do the right thing, he now denies the Nebuah of Yirmiyahu and actually forces Yirmiyahu to join him in taking the rest of the Jews down to Mitzrayim, against Yirmiyahu as well. He transports Yirmiyahu down with him. Sounds like he practically kidnaps Yirmiyahu and drags him down to Mitzrayim. And in fact, it is exactly as Yochanan had predicted. Gedaliah was murdered, and Nafotsu, all the remaining Jews got scattered. The Avde Sheris Yehuda. Exactly as he predicted, that's exactly what happened. Tragically. So as I said before, this is a truly horrible Rosh Hashanah. This was a truly horrible Rosh Hashanah. The Rosh Hashanah after Korban Bayis recently. But then the question is, this is a very depressing part of the Sefer Yirmiyahu, okay? A part of Torah we need to learn. But we're supposed to draw from this. And to put it more sharply, what's the avoda of today? So Gedaliah is about the story of Gedaliah, so we learn the story of Gedaliah, and now what? What does it mean for me? So the truth is, so one thing it means for me, clearly perhaps the first thing that strikes us from the story is that actions have consequences. And actions tend to have spirals of consequences. And one, if you ever thought to yourself, after this one little affair, no one really knows, no one really cares, it doesn't really matter that much. If you ever need a vivid illustration of what Avera Baris Avera looks like, Yishmael wanted to kill Gedaliah because we can kill more Jews and more and more and more, and then whoever wasn't killed by Yishmael was in danger from Nebuchadnezzar, and it got to the point where the Jews who remained lost their immunity, you know, all because of Yishmael. And you might say, okay, that's truly horrific. This is truly heinous. But rather, as Yishmael is a Russian Marusha, murder, Baruch Hashem, none of us are, that's not a Messiah that any of us are grappling with, I hope, I assume, for each of our Nisonos. But murder is way beyond anything that we're dreaming of doing. So, this is a truly horrific story, a tsar for Klal Yisrael, but where is the relevance to me? So there's relevance to us, I think, in two fronts. There's another perspective on the story, and then we can come back to Yishmael. The other perspective, because while the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah that we learned focuses on the chet of Yishmael, right? Yishmael killed Gedaliah, and that's why we have Tzom Gedaliah. But there's a Gemara in Nida, turning the page, that has a different angle on the story. Points to another chet, and really the Gemara is based on a single pasuk that we sort of skipped over a little bit. Now we're ready to come back. We did skip the whole pasuk, we skipped one phrase, a very bizarre phrase. Parak Memal Pasuk, that's the top second side of the page, where we're talking about the tragic, cruel irony of the pit that used to be for the mitzvah of Aliyah Regal, and now is being used by Yishmael as a mass grave for all of his victims. Take a look at the language of the pasuk. Habar is a painful pasuk to read, and then it becomes a puzzling pasuk to read. Habar Asher Hishlich Sham Yishmael. It's called Pigri Anashim, that pit where Yishmael had tossed all the corpses. The pasuk goes on to say later
Hu asher asa melech asa. King Asa had originally built that pit. But here, notice how the pasuk. Let's go back to that phrase we just skipped. The bar where Yishmael had tossed all of the kol pigreha anashim, all of the corpses, asher hika biyad Gedaliahu, all the corpses who were killed by Gedaliah. Strike your screen. Gedaliah. Gemara Nida says, Gedaliah? Gedaliah didn't kill anybody. The man couldn't hurt a fly. He wasn't even willing to authorize the murder of an assassin, of a rodent. Gedaliah didn't kill anybody. These people were killed by Yeshua, the murderer. What do you mean Shahikab Yad Gedaliah? Shahikab Yad Gedaliah. Gedaliah killed them. The Gemara Nida says, what? V'chi Gedaliah haragan. Ho Yishmael haragan. Nida salmach alf amal alf. God didn't kill them. The Gemara says, no. Apparently, he did. But he didn't. But he did. V'toch shahoyah lo lachush latzas yochav min kereach v'lo chash. He should have been concerned with Yochanan's advice. And he ignored it. Nonchalant? Nah, it's all fine. Male alav akas of kila haragan. For the sin of not paying attention to Yochanan, the Torah considers it in a certain sense as though Gedaliah killed all these hundreds of Jews. What do you mean? What does that mean? What's the Gemara telling you? In your own words, in English. What's the Gemara saying? We're going to say that Gedaliah, we're going to consider Gedaliah to have killed these people because he was, in a word, starts with an, a long word that starts with an I, and an R, and another R.
Irresponsible.
Absolutely. He was irresponsible in the worst way possible. You're the leader of a community, and someone tells you, here's a looming problem. And Yochanan was very clear. He said, here's what's going to happen, and here are the consequences. You're going to be killed, and it's going to destroy the entire community. And Gedaliah just brushed it off. I think you're utterly wrong. And just ignored it. And unfortunately, Yochanan was right. It seems that Yochanan had evidence, and what he suspected was indeed correct. And Gedaliah just ignored it. That's irresponsibility of the worst sort. Gedaliah bears a degree of, it doesn't absolve Yishmael. Yishmael is a murderer. But Gedaliah also is culpable for the death of hundreds of Jews. Because he could have done something about it. Then Rava codifies that as a din. Amar Rava, hi lishna bisha. This bisha means bad. Bisha bish, beis your chin, is Aramaic for ra. So lishna bisha is lashon hara. You're not supposed to accept it. We are supposed to be choshesh, concerned. What does that mean? We've heard this before. If there's Lashon Hara that has practical, someone tells you Lashon Hara. Someone tells you something about Yanko and Shimon. So if it's irrelevant to you, it's irrelevant to you. But if it is relevant, and if it's true, you need to take precautions. So I can't be makabel, that's be choshesh, which means not be makabel, not be makabel. The answer is, if the guy comes and tells me Lashon Hara Yanko L'Shemen, so I can't assume it's definitely true, but I have to be concerned with the possibility that it may be true. I need to be reasonable. I have to say it could be it's false, and it could be it's not.
So if there's no nafkamina, say Lashon Hara, and irrelevant Lashon Hara. That's right. It may be false. I don't need to be a part of this conversation. But if it has if the case is that if it's true, I have some risk exposure, or someone else has some risk exposure. So then I need to say to myself, this may or may not be true. In case it's true, I have to take precautions. I'm not going to assume for sure that he's a Russia. No longer assume for sure he's a Tzadik either. He may or may not be. I need to be prudent. I need to be responsible. That's a din. It's often the case that people, ironically, been noted by many.
But there are many people who all of a sudden are careful Lashon Hara to not say Lashon Hara when it's not supposed to be saying Lashon Hara. It actually matters to someone else's protection. But that's what's going on here. Not on the here wasn't an issue on the giving end, it's on the receiving end. All of a sudden, because I didn't want to listen to the Lashon Hara, now you're supposed to listen to Lashon Hara. Now it could be at the big time you never listen to Lashon Hara, but now you're supposed to. And he didn't. That's the chet of Gedalia, is the chet of irresponsibility, and the chet of a lack of care in Shmiras HaLashon. So Gedalia's chet is the chet of Beidam L'Chaveiro. How about the chet of Yishmael? So there's a lot we can learn from the chet of Gedalia. If we have responsibility for others, to take their responsibility seriously, and to be Roas HaNola, to think decisions through, not just in terms of the here and now, but to think long term, what are the implications? I can do A, B, or C. How is each one going to play in the long term? And to be careful, Shmiras HaLashon, Bein Lahakka, Bein Lahakka. So three great lessons from, practical lessons for us, from Gedalia. How about Yishmael? Yishmael, Baruch Hashem, none of us are considering murder. But I want to show you one phrase that the Malbim
highlights. Yishmael shows up in the opening pasuk of Parak Mem Aleph. Yishmael comes to this state dinner, sitting down with the governor for Rosh Hashanah Sukkah. How is he described? How is Yishmael described?
We haven't heard about that up until now. What is Yichus? Why is his Yichus all of a sudden so important? Especially when you contrast it with the last phrase in the passage, Bates, his victim. Is Gedalia by Yalmes Oso? He killed, doesn't even mention by name the end of Pasuk Beis. He who had Oso Asher Yifkid Malchav Dabarz. He killed he who had been appointed by Malchav Dabarz. Why did we hear that he's Mizera Bulut? Gedalia was not. Gedalia was just some Joe Schmo. No Yichas, no fancy background, just a regular guy who had been appointed by Nebuchadnezzar, Emperor of Babel, to be in charge of the Jews. And Yishmael says, Gedalia? It should be me. I am descended from David HaMelech. I deserve this position. And Yishmael was apparently a narcissistic, self-centered rat who had such a strong sense of entitlement, such an incredibly strong sense of Machiavelli, that if he didn't get what he thought was his, he totally lost any semblance of morality. Because yes, as you said, most likely, not just doesn't say so, but most likely Baalis offered him a nice chunk of change. I'm sure Baalis had offered him a lot of money to do this job for him.
But ultimately,
Gedalia was right. A Jew to kill him, not a Jew for money. Hi, he talking? It wasn't really that. As you said, Baalis knew whom to ask. He knew whom to ask. He knew that Yishmael was a weak spot because he suspected that Yishmael was feeling like it should have been me. Because if he had what I should have, and you think about how now obviously this is a sense of magiali of entitlement run amok. But there are certain things that even not as extreme happen all the time. Consider the following: what did Yishmael want? Presumably, as you said, I'll be in charge, right? I deserve to be the one. I'm Yizar Hamalucha. I'm a Malchus Beis David. I should be the next one. Again, this is a very extreme situation. But the essence of what he did happens very often. Gedalia got something that Yishmael thought it should have been mine. What did Yishmael do? He's jealous. He's envious. Magia Lee. he becomes irrational. You know how I know he becomes irrational? Not only he becomes immoral, he lost all semblance of morality, he's willing to kill for money, he became irrational also. What was irrational what Yishmael did?
Because it cost him in
the thing. Yeah! He didn't get anything! And even before Yochanan showed up, it wasn't Yochanan, then she shows up, pushes him out. Forget about that. Yishmael shows up, assassinates Gedaliah, and doesn't just install himself, he murders every single person in the temple. You just eliminated the people you thought you would be in charge of. You killed them all. That's not a very successful way to launch a coup. Who's left to be your subjects? No. But it no longer become about, I want to have that spot that he has. It just became about, I'm so angry at him for taking what should be mine that I'm going to destroy him at all costs. And if the cost of killing him is have to kill everyone else, within Yishmael's own murderous calculations, that's the way it's going to be. It's kinna run amok to the point where you're not even thinking, you're not even getting what it is that you wanted. It's so often true in machlokas. A machlokas starts so often by some petty narushkeit. It's a machlokas in a family, a machlokas in a community. And so often it happens that the machlokas takes on a life of itself, a life of its own. And people forget what they're originally fighting about. All we know is we don't talk to them. Why? Oh no, we don't talk to them. It's been 10 generations since we spoke to them. Why? It's just the machlokas takes on a life of its own. The kinna takes on a life of its own. As opposed to actually thinking about things. And if the chet of Gedaliah is totally ben Adam l'chaveiro, let's close with the ben Adam l'makom aspect of what we've just been discussing about Yishmael. Because this notion that Magia Li, I ought to have X. So if you have X, I'm angry at you, and I'm going to destroy you because you destroyed me. Gedaliah, you're the reason why I, Yishmael, am not in charge, and therefore I'm going to take you down, even if it means taking all the Jews down with you. It's absurd. It's irrational. It's horrific mitos. And at its core, the Chazon Ish points out in a different context in Emunah Bitachon, that it runs, it's a problem the other lahak, because it runs awry of what the Chazon Ish points to as perhaps the most fundamental agarat in all of Shas in terms of practical Emunah. Gemara, Yuma Lamaches, the Baal Lamaches, the Ma'al, the Kapal Lamaches, and Bez. The Gemara says, the Kodesh Baruch Hu runs the world. The Baal Shem runs the world. Sometimes it's obvious, often it's inobvious. And I might feel that if there was X number of spots to get into a particular yeshiva, X number of spots to get into a particular program, there was one position in the camp left. There was one internship left. He got it, I didn't get it. There's a causal relationship, right? I didn't get it because he took it. It was a girl I wanted to badly to date, and she ended up going out with my friend instead. So I didn't get the girl because she did. I didn't get the job because he did. I didn't get the girl because he did. I didn't get the promotion because he did. I didn't get big partner because he did. We're both bidding on the house. I really wanted badly to buy the house. He outbid me, and I didn't get the house because he did. And it sounds reasonable. And yet, the Gemara points out, no person touches what's meant for someone else. When Shaul, before he's a king, he's just a Jew looking for his lost donkeys, and he's going to find Shmuel HaNavi, because they told him that Shmuel HaNavi can help him find his lost donkeys, unbeknownst to him, HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Shmuel that Shaul's had your way and you're going to anoint him as king. So this is a happier story in the town of Mitzvah. Shaul comes to Mitzvah looking for Shmuel, and that Sukkim and Sefer Shmuel describe, he walks in and he's not really sure where to go. So he asks a couple of girls in the street, how do I find the Chozer? How do I find the Navi? And they give him the most convoluted set of directions possible. Well, you'll go there, then you'll find him because he's there. So if you go there, you'll find him because that's where he is, so you'll find him over there. Well, why the Pesukim, why did they talk like that? And why did say for Shmuel record all that excess verbiage? So the Gemara here says, you know why? They were talking like that probably because Shaul was told Dr. Hanson, he's a really good looking guy, and he had come over to them just to ask innocently for directions. They want a couple extra seconds to be talking to this really handsome guy. So they're just like babbling on and on and on and on. Okay, but then why isn't it safe for Shmuel? Why they said that we understand, but why is it recorded in Tanakh? It's recorded in Tanakh because the Kadosh Baruch Hu saw that the Shaul would walk over to someone who would give him unnecessarily long directions, because Shaul needed to be delayed a few more seconds. Because, as the Gemara says in Yuma, Ein Malchus Milgas B'chavita Kifil Kumlom Yuma. The Malchus will begin exactly when it's supposed to begin, and end exactly when it's supposed to, on the hair. No Malchus will take away from another one's even a hair. If Shaul was supposed to become king at 11:53 and 57 seconds, then he was not going to get there a moment before 57 seconds. If that meant that Kadosh Baruch Hu would see to it that he would bump into specifically that group of girls who would give him very long directions and delay by extra 10 seconds so that he would show up exactly on time. Because the Kadosh Baruch Hu was running the show and you get what you're supposed to get. No one touches what's meant for someone else. Even though it seems like it's a zero-sum game, only one house, either I get it, he gets it. Only one spot, either I get it, he gets it. The Kadosh Baruch Hu was working with so many variables, there's so many moving parts, that a Kadosh Baruch Hu could see that you both get, Kadosh Baruch Hu could see that you neither get, or that he gets, or that you get. All the possibilities are open. So even though it seems like I didn't get because he got, what's actually the case is I didn't get because the Kadosh Baruch Hu decided that I'm not getting. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided that he is getting. Those are two separate decisions. If you think about it rationally, if you believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it makes sense. It's a lot harder to feel your kishkas, though. To feel that in your kishkas is a deep bitachon. A bitachon which Yishmael sorely lacked. And so Yishmael looks at Gedaliah, you got X and I didn't get X. And that's a melding of two midos rows. A sense of entitlement, of magia li, of I deserve X, Y, and Z, because of who I am, because of what my last name is, because I'm Yizera Melucha, because I'm wealthy, because of whatever it is. Because I decided that I deserve that sense of entitlement, and the sense of envy and kinna that's ultimately rooted in a lack of emuna, which drove him to Ahmanish horrific ends. Baruch Hashem, we do not struggle with Lo Sirtzach. But we do struggle with the Shorash Hadvar. The Shorash Hadvar in terms of Gedaliah's Ben Chadero failings, the need to take responsibility, the need to think long-term about decisions, and the need to be careful not to listen to Hashem when you shouldn't, at the same time be Choshish when you should. And the Shorash of the Sharashim of the Chet of Yishmael, both to stop feeling entitled, to stop feeling everything is Magili, and everything should just be coming to me on a silver platter, and to recognize that Kadosh Baruch Hu runs a world, and it sometimes life could be very, very frustrating. And it is sometimes very, very frustrating. I don't get the things that I feel I should get, and maybe someone else is getting something that should be me, and yet, to have the emuna that they'll call you by name, they'll put you in the place that you ought to be. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is running the world. It's not always clear. Sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu is looking through the window, and often he's peeking through the cracks. He's always watching us, but oftentimes we can't necessarily tell in the moment that he is. And these are some of the messages of Tzav Gedaliah. And it absolutely is, as we see, there is a profound interplay of Emunah and B'nai Melchaveiro. And so one of the many approaches to that Rambam, it's not surprising at all that if I lack a sense of a Kaddish Baruch Hu runs the world, if my response to Tzara is Nikra Nikres, if there's a lack of Emunah, it will also lead to Achzarias. Maybe in a particularly horrific way that happened with Yishmael, or more mild ways all the time. So the point of a tzom is hopefully an easy fast, but much more importantly a meaningful tzom that's mechazek our emunah. That sharpens our awareness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and HaKadosh Baruch Hu alive and the midos tovos that ought to flow from